For the first day of 11th grade, and I walked in, and all the teachers were like trying, of course, on the first day to be strict and get everyone in their place and show who they are. And I remember walking into Mrs. Vey's class for the first time and her saying, "Hi, I'm Mrs. Vey." She turned around to the board and she wrote down her phone number and her email address. And she said, "If anyone ever needs anything, this is my phone number, email address. Feel free to call me either just to schmooze if you had a question on anything in class or if you need anything for a test." And she like was serious. She told us which hours were best for her. And I feel like that kind of just sums up what Mrs. Vey is. She's here for us and she wants to hear from us. She wants us to call her. And she, when you do speak to her, she really is there for us and is just someone that's really, really there for all the students anytime. Thank you, Mrs. Vey.
Okay, thank you, Shani. This is so much easier when I see all these faces that I know and I'm comfortable with. And as I was walking in, it was like, oh, I can do this. It's fine. Okay. I want to thank Mrs. Leader and Mrs. Gross and thank them for inviting me to come speak. It's really a treat to come and see everyone and to be able to connect and to get that opportunity. It's also really helpful for me to kind of have that little like push to look at things a little bit more carefully during the 90s. It's not a happy time. It's a little bit painful. I tend to run away from pain. I don't really like it, so I don't want to go and look at things, and that's not necessarily always the appropriate response. So it kind of pushed me to kind of look at things. I also just want to give credit to Brevard and Lopiansky, which some of the concepts, a lot of the concepts in this shiur is based on a shiur that he gave on Beit HaMitzrayim. Any errors are mine and mine alone. Okay, I want to start with a story. Okay, a grandparent, this is a true story, a grandparent decided to treat his family, his children, his grandchildren, this wonderful vacation, almost like a family reunion in a certain place. Yes, it did require a plane ride to get there. And it the tagline of this place is the happiest place on earth. And it's supposed to be an amazing place, rides, it's beautiful. There's fireworks, I think, every Monday and Wednesday night. There's a enchanted magic castle, HaMeven Yavin. Anyway, so, and like their goal is to entertain you and try to make you happy. It's clean, it's really clean, very clean. They have different hotels for different types of people in case your taste is this way or that way. If you like the grand old-fashioned hotel, they have that. If you're like more of a tropical person, they have like a Hawaii thing with even its own lagoon. If you're like more of a futuristic person, that they have that. And if you're into African safaris, they'll have that. And they have live animals right outside your balcony. Really. The happiest place on earth. So the family's having a wonderful time in this place all together. And there's this one picture that survives this vacation in particular. It's a picture of beautiful background, perfect weather, swaying palm trees, a ride in the background. I mean, the happiest place on earth, right? And there's this little boy, maybe about 5 years old, and he's sitting on a bench, beautiful palm trees in the background. Has family on either side, cousins, parents, whatever. He has this huge ice cream thing, like huge, you know, one on the stick, vanilla ice cream, chocolate coated, right? You're getting it? Yeah. This thing is almost the size of his head. No joke. He's in this picture, he's holding it. It's almost the size of his head. Okay. Beautiful. The happiest place on earth. This is the picture. Okay, the happiest place on earth. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so he's just crying. For what? B'chiya b'chinam, right? Crying for nothing. It sound familiar? Little bit, little bit. Tisha B'Av night, they were right next to the holiest place on earth. Summertime is supposed to be that like fun time. We have no homework. We have fewer cares. In theory, unless you're driving a million carpools to different camps, you actually have more free time, or you're filling up on summer courses, or you're making a camp. Okay, but it's supposed to be a happier time with the nicer weather, etc. And right in the middle of summer, we end up with Bein HaMitzvah, this really hard time of mourning. It's got two bookends. It's got Shavasar Batam is on one, and you've got Tisha B'Av on the other. Two bookends of this time period. And we end up, when we get to the end of this time period, we end up historically crying. And we're crying over nothing. How did we get there? Let's go back a little bit to the beginning of this time period. So go back to Shavasar Batamas. Many hard, horrible tragedies happened on Shavasar Batamas, but the very first one was the Shviras HaLuchos, was that breaking of the Luchos. That's the seminal event that sets everything else in motion. When Moshe comes down from, just to remind you, Moshe comes down, he has the Luchos, he sees Bnei Yisrael, and they're sitting. At that point, the ksav in the luchos, the writing in the luchos, evaporates. It disappears. Some of Farshim say Moshe Rabbeinu throws the luchos down as a sort of like shock and awe type of strategy to Bnei Yisrael, like snap out of it. What are you doing? Other Mefarshim say that when the ksav evaporated, the luchos got so heavy, he couldn't hold them anymore, and they dropped to the ground. Rabbein Abchaya says there, comments in his commentary, he compares the luchos to a goose and the ksav to the nefesh of the neshama. And we know once the neshama leaves a guf, goes for kfura. The luchos without the ksav are destined for the ground. In his book, Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, has anyone ever heard of Viktor Frankl and Man's Search for Meaning? He's a famous psychiatrist before the Holocaust. He went through the Holocaust, he is a survivor, and he relates the following story. A rabbi comes to see him, and from Eastern Europe, his first wife and six children, he lost in Auschwitz, they were gassed. And he's coming to Dr. Frankl after he's just found out his second wife is unable to have children. And he's coming for help because he's in despair. And in their conversation, Dr. Frankl says to the rabbi, but surely the meaning of life can't only be for you to have children. It has to be more than that. Didn't help. The rabbi was still completely heartbroken. He says, I'm not going to have any son of my own to say Kaddish for me. Dr. Engel says, but surely you'll see your children again in heaven. At which point, the man completely breaks down sobbing. He's completely broken. And this is where he gets the true reason of his suffering. He says, Dr. Frankl, you see, my children were pure and innocent. They died on Kiddush Hashem. They will merit the very highest place in Shemayim. But what am I? How come? I can't expect as an old sinful man to possibly be assigned to the same place. Dr. Frankl responds to this with a pasuk from Tehillim. Notis farta ata, kama dimasi penodecha, halo besifrasecha. You, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have counted my wanderings yourselves. Place my tears in your flask. Are they not in your record? Frankl explained that perhaps no one can understand the ways of Hashem that for this very reason, this is the meaning of this man's suffering, so that he can ultimately be worthy being placed in the same place as his children. Please understand my point, and Dr. Frankel's point as well. It's not to understand the why, ladies. We can't. But finding meaning helps to fill the empty space. That rabbi felt empty. His suffering felt empty of meaning. His life had holes. That was why he was despairing. That emptiness hurts. But meaning can fill that. But when we're empty, it hurts. Just like the luchos. Something that is empty calls out to be filled. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, the Torah first describes Tohu Vavohu, and our school translates this as astonishingly empty, not just regular empty, shockingly empty, a shocking vacuum. It's the way Hashem made the world. Nature abhors a vacuum. The world is created as a guf. That's just the shell. It's going to be calling out to be filled. It's empty. Now, the question is, what are we filling the world with? What is the world supposed to be filled with? What's the world's neshama, so to speak? All of us have that empty. Yes? We all feel that. We can all connect with that, that feeling of a sense of void. That emptiness and the appearance of emptiness in the world can be almost discerned as Chil Hashem, almost as Tuma. There's an interesting idea. I was talking to my son about Tuma and Tahara, and because he's doing Mishnayos, and I don't understand Tuma and Tahara at all. And I'm hearing him, and I have no idea what he's talking about. I said, wait. Metal can become Tame? He's like, yes. That's like a definitive yes. I said, what about plastic? He's like, mommy, they didn't talk about plastic in the times of the Mishnayos. I'm like, okay. He's like, but there's another thing. Wood. Wood is a weird, funny type of category. Clay Aitzim have a different status. A flat piece of wood, like a board, cannot be makabel tuma. It cannot become tame. However, if it has a lip at all, even a very slight lip, he talked to me about wax. I didn't understand what he was saying at that point. But this idea of a lip, at that point, if it can hold any mamashas whatsoever, it's considered a kli. And at that point, it can be makabel tuma. Okay. So then I was thinking about it. See, if it's a kli, it could be makabel tuma. If it's empty, if it's not empty, banging around in my head. In the meantime, I had gotten up to Sharpreshus in Maseilas Yesharim, and I was having a very, very hard time with it. Anyone who's ever heard me talk in my classroom or talk to me privately, you know I did not have a great experience, shall we say, with Maseilas Yesharim in seminary. Totally my fault. I was not mature enough to handle it. Sleep deprived, not mature enough to handle it, fine. Did not good. It took me this long to even possibly pick it up again. And I'm up to sharp features. It's terrible. I'm like, this, what he's talking about is so far beyond anything I could possibly imagine doing. It was like, forget it. All I could think was, forget it. Gehenna is waiting for me. Like, there's no way. It's so far up there. And I'm really struggling with this. And I'm like, should not have picked up that safer. I'm not ready for it again. Right? My husband comes home 2 days later. Mom, just 2 days later. He comes home and he's all excited. He's hurt. He's like, I just heard the best shiur from Rabbi Cohn, Rev Zev Cohn. He was listening to a shiur from Rev Zev Cohn from Chicago. He was a mashgiach. He was his mashgiach in yeshiva. We're big fans. And he's like, I said, what was the shiur in? He's like, you guys know the answer, right? Not precious, but Mr. Shisharim. I was like, I groan. I'm like, he's like, what? Like, what's wrong with social charm? I was like, I'm having a really hard time with it. I'm really discouraged. I don't think this is for me. Blah, blah, blah. And he's like, he gets even more excited. You're upset that I'm not happy? Okay, fine. Gets even more excited. And he's like, that's exactly the clue that Rabbi Cohn was talking about. Exactly. He said, you're misunderstanding it. Take it from the other angle. He's talking about what a person can become. It's not, I'm never going to get there. It's, oh my goodness, look what a person can become. He can get to this kind of level. Look what a person can fill his life with. Oh. The greatest tuma is what? Ladies, what's the greatest tuma? Emptiness? Where's the greatest emptiness? What's the greatest thing of that can bring tuma? Kohanim are very careful with this.
Yeah.
Right? So with why is amaze the greatest tuma? A lot of you probably know this already, right? Inverse relationships, right? Because the thing in creation that can do the greatest can be Makadim Shem Shemayim at the highest level is what? Is what, ladies? And the Shama, Ayid. That is a good thing in creation that can bring the greatest Kedusha to the world. When a Jew, that guf, loses the neshama that has that much potential, can achieve such incredibly great things, and that's gone, it's a vacuum. That vacuum is tuma, right? Inverse relationship. The greater the Kedusha, the greater tuma if it leaves. Nature abhors a vacuum. We all have experienced emptiness. When we're empty, when we have a project we're working on, let me go back. When we're very empty, it causes us a certain amount of pain. We seek to fill the emptiness, just like the world seeks to fill emptiness, just like political, you know, for those who've talked about politics and history and, you know, power vacuums and on global politic level, everywhere and in our lives. Emptiness seeks to be filled. It hurts. It's uncomfortable. We all can relate to that sense of emptiness. And when we've had something, we've lost it, it's that much more uncomfortable, right? You're working on a project, right? Either work or a paper at school, and all of a sudden, you're almost done even, and all of a sudden, the computer crashes. Yes? Have you ever noticed the closer you are to completion, the harder that is? It's a greater loss, greater vacuum. It hurts more. Shidduch, right? A lot of potential, a lot of promise. When it doesn't work out, ouch. 1 or 2 days, not such a big deal, right? Get a little farther along, it hurts a little bit more. Yeah? What do we... When we lose someone close to us, doesn't it feel like there's a hole there? Doesn't it feel like there's a gaping hole that can't be filled? And it hurts, right? What do we do when it hurts so much? What do we automatically do? How do we do, ladies? Don't we cry? Bechia is our expression of that pain, of that emptiness. That's our natural expression. That's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. All have big things and little things and everything in between, where we lose things and there's an emptiness and it hurts. I do not remember, to my great dismay, which teacher figured, like, helping me get this. Shmuel Aleph, Shaul HaMelech. We're learning about Shaul HaMelech, right? We all learned about him and he went crazy and da-da-da. And then at some point, maybe in seminary, I don't remember, maybe it was in seminary, the teacher gets up to that point, and I'm like, yeah, Shaul HaMelech, and he went crazy, and okay, right? And she reads the pasuk, right? The pasuk is, Beruach Hashem Sarah Me'im Shaul, Uvasatu Ruach Ra'a Me'ez Hashem. The Ruach of Hashem, the spirit of Hashem, left, was removed from in Shaul, and he was given this bad Ruach, this bad spirit. And she explained something to us. She said, you don't understand. Beruach Hashem Sarah Me'im Shaul, from inside of him. He was full. Ladies, what are we looking to add? Like, what are we looking to fill? When we have that emptiness, what are we looking to fill? Meaning? Purpose? Right, that famous Mark Twain thing, you know, the 2 days, it's not true, he didn't say it, but it sounds good. The 2 days are the best days, the most important days of a person's life, right? Are the day he was born and the day he finds out why he was born. Meaning, purpose, connection. That's what we're seeking to fill that emptiness with, right? Shaul HaMelech had Ruach Hashem, he had Ruach HaKodesh. Can you imagine? He had it. He was full. Can you imagine feeling that full? He forfeited it. And it's gone. How do you stand? How do you stand after something like that? You're here and then you're not. And it's empty, that horrible emptiness. That's what happened to Shaul HaMelech. That is real bechia. That's real crying. You're crying over real stuff. When that real and that real meaning, real purpose is empty. And ladies, we try to fill it with stuff that isn't real. And then we cry over it because we lost it. It doesn't make you feel better, right? We all know that. There's a story. Story of three writers. It's not a true story. It's a little bit true. I'll tell you in a minute. Story of three writers. They're in a restaurant. They make a bet. Some of you might have heard this story. Who can write the best story in the fewest amount of words? Someone wins. Or it's in the premise of an advertisement. It actually, something like this did actually appear in the paper in like 1900, 1910. For sale. Baby shoes. Never worn. For sale. Baby shoes. Never worn. Every time. Why does it hit so hard? Why does it hurt so much? Crying for lost potential. There's an emptiness, right? It's a kli. And there's a lifetime waiting to be filled. And the potential is limitless almost. We can do so much. if it doesn't get filled, or it's chas v'chalila filled with the wrong things, filled, not really filled, it's a tragedy. That's real tragedy. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and it felt like a gaping hole. That's what it was. Why? Because it was what we could have become. That's what we lost. It was that potential to be amazing. On Shavuos or Betamuz, way back when, we lost the Ketusha, the Luchos, the Kesav. What we were supposed to be doing was lost. And on Tisha B'Av, we didn't even realize what we were crying over. Tragedy just continued. Rabbi Lipiansky says that when the Bria starts wondering why it's empty, that's when it will start filling up. We need to sit on Tisha B'Av. This was hard because I don't want to face this. But we sit on Tisha B'Av on the floor and we stare that emptiness right in the face and we come to terms with it and we look at it and we look at it hard and it's empty and we feel it and we cry and it's hard and we cry because it's really hard. But ladies, then on Tisha B'Av afternoon, we get up and we sweep the floor and we start to fill the emptiness. Mashiach's coming. B'mehirah b'yameinu.